Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are just as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They're milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
On February 28, 1993, the FBI were on the brink of conducting a raid on the Branch Davidians.
This cult, led by David Koresh, had been founded decades earlier based on a series of twisted religious beliefs, and they believed that the second coming of Christ was imminent.
Reports of dangerous military practices and abuse within its compound had led the FBI to finally act against the cult, and what resulted was one of the longest standoffs in U.S. history, known as the Waco Siege.
How did David Koresh manage to persuade so many people to follow him on his depraved path?
Betches Media presents Not Another True Crime Podcast. It's all fun and games until someone gets hurt.
Depraved indeed.
And a long path. This path is
and a very long path. I feel like this group was around for a very long time before meeting its end.
It was, yeah. It's a doozy.
It was. But before we get into that, you guys already know what's happening. Welcome back. It's another episode of Not Another True Crime Podcast. I'm Sarah Levine.
And I'm Danny Murphy. You know, we're your partners in wine, crime, and time. And we got a doozy this week, like we said.
I mean, I feel like we say that every week, but honestly, this week is really, there's...
And you know what also we say
so
every
much
week
to talk about.
And because both of these things are true. We always have a doozy. And this other thing is always true. Please rate, review, and subscribe. You know, it means we're not asking you to do it because there's going to be a second coming that we're trying to save you from or help you with. We're just doing asking you to do it out of the goodness of your heart and soul.
Yeah. Please rate, review, subscribe wherever you're listening to us. And also follow us on Instagram at Not Another True Crime. The account's blowing up. We've gotten so many nice messages from you guys. I screenshot them all and send them to Danny.
They are so sweet.
So nice. So like thank you guys for listening to us. If you found us through the Instagram or vice versa, and thanks for your messages and for playing trivia.
I mean, that's the best part.
It's the best part of my day. Crap, I forgot to think of my questions for today. I'll have to do that after this. I'll probably just do Waco. It'll be Waco themed because it's going to be on the brain. And I don't know. I feel like people have been requesting this for a long time and I just never wanted to do it because there's so much information. That has not changed.
There is so much information. That is still the constant. And with that, I'm sure there's going to be a sentence that we don't say that you're going to be like, this is my favorite part or the most important part. You know, to err is human, to have a raid is human, you know, whatever. Yeah. But also if you're shocked too, because I feel like a lot of people got invested in this after the Netflix doc or the docuseries. And if you're looking for that, it is now on Paramount Plus. Don't waste an hour on Netflix like I did trying to find it.
Yeah, I was trying to find it. I Googled like Waco documentary, and then I ended up with the one on Hulu that is like a 1 hour episode maybe of Truth and Lies. I mean, it was fine. I feel like it wasn't anything like super groundbreaking.
Exactly. It's a good if you want a visual element after you listen to the audio version of Waco, head on over to Hulu.
Yeah, I feel like there's something to be said for that. I feel like I read a lot of the information in like articles, but you know what? It's all good.
It's all good.
It is all good. Did you watch the Waco docuseries?
I watched the Netflix. I watched it when it was on Netflix.
Ugh, I should have.
But that was back in the day. So I have no clue. Yeah. So I remember watching that and it was good. And then I remember I was like, oh, I'm just going to like rewatch Why Not before this. And I was like, I'm not going to.
Oh my God. That was like when we did Herbalife and I tried to rewatch Betting on Zero and I had to pay like $3 on YouTube TV because they took it off Netflix.
It's so hard to like, I would do any free trial for Paramount, but like it asked me for so many passcodes and stuff like that. I'm like, I don't know how to do that. I heard the iCarly revival is great on it, but you know, yes. I'll get to it eventually.
I know. I do need to watch it to support our girl, Lacey.
Yes. Scam goddess. She's taking over.
But aside from that, no, I haven't gotten to dive in, but I mean, let's dive into Waco, to the Branch Davidians, to David Koresh. He was born Vernon Wayne Howell in Houston, Texas in 1959. Weird to think about the fact that he's like the same age as my parents, or he would have been.
Oh, that is weird. Yeah. And also, can I say, I've never understood. I've never gotten more. So I'd be like, just call me David.
Vernon's well, I know, right? Yeah. He was just like, Vernon Wayne Howell is a cool name. It's not a biblical name at all.
No, but it is very much a cult leader name, I feel like.
Yeah, I feel like you're right. But he needed a rebrand so that he could convince people that he was like a messiah. Yeesh. So he was born to a 15-year-old single mother. And I feel like this is straight out of the serial killer origin storybook, but he is not really a serial killer. But Vernon never knew his father, and he was raised by his grandparents. We see that so often. In conversations with the FBI, he described his childhood as lonely. Mm-hmm. Vernon was dyslexic and a bad student, and the other students would tease him and call him Vernie, which, aww. Yeah, but also like not the worst name that they could have called you.
Yeah, it's not like they it would have been worse if they called him Vermin. You know what I mean? Like a rat.
Yeah,
like
see, that's like the ingenuity that we know from child bullies.
You gotta be on your feet. That's what we expect. As a bully. Yeah. Vernie's just cute. It's like Laverne and Shirley. It's like a pet name for that.
Yeah. I know. It's just like a nickname.
Yeah.
Whatever, though. So he was traumatized by that. He dropped out of high school, but was really interested in music and the Bible. And by age 12, he had memorized large portions of it.
Very Reliant K energy.
I was going to say weird flex. remember when they had that one banger on the radio and then you found out they were a Christian band?
Oh, yeah. But I still think that we should get jerseys because we'd make a good team.
I mean, I feel like we all thought that was like a cute prom pickup line, and they were probably talking about like getting Jesus jerseys or something.
Jesus jerseys.
Yeah. Oh, God. Nobody needs that. Vernon claimed that he memorized both the New and Old Testaments by the time he was 18. Like, sure. I'll give you that one, I guess.
Yeah.
And he also said that when he was a child, God spoke to him and said, "You're the chosen one. You are my Messiah."
Okay.
Yeah. When he was 20, he joined the Church of Seventh-day Adventists, which was his mother's church, but he was expelled for being a bad influence on the younger members. Mm-mm-mm. And by 1983, he joined the Brand Davidians, which were a religious group that was an offshoot of the Seventh-day Adventist, founded by Victor Hutef in 1934. Whew. So, like, a little bit about them. I actually didn't know that they went so deep, because I think most cults tend to crash and burn, like, you know, within like a 10-year span, if I'm being like generous.
Well, cults are like restaurants. I feel like we're 50% or whatever close in their first year, because you can't get the clientele. You can't get the clientele.
It's true. And then if you don't close, you just become a mainstream church, I guess.
You become a Sparrow.
Yeah. I also feel like this started off as a sort of offshoot, and then he took it to a dark place. Mm-hmm. I feel like so a little bit of the founder of the Branch Davidians, Victor Hutef. He emigrated from Bulgaria to the United States. He basically called for reform within the Seventh-day Adventist Church, but they like did not fucking care what he had to say. Thank you. Next, literally the church to him. So basically, he and a bunch of people broke off and they started a compound near Waco, Texas, actually in Carmel, in 1935. And they were preparing for, you guessed it, the coming of Jesus Christ himself. Mm. I feel like that all cults are. Like every cult, you know, apocalyptic in some sense.
It's funny. Every cult is like a surprise birthday party. We're like, no, she's coming. Get ready, get ready, get ready. And everyone's hiding with the lights off.
And then someone else walks through the door and you're like, okay, five more minutes.
Get behind the couch. Yeah. Get a glass of Kool-Aid and get behind the couch.
Oh my God. So true. Ugh. So they believed basically that the Seventh-day Adventists got distracted by worldly pursuits and were sort of like shirking their duties to prepare for the imminent coming of Christ. They initially led simple lives. They would avoid most commercial entertainment. They were hardworking and they developed a sort of self-sustaining community. I'm getting big Rajneesh Purim vibes. Like communes sound cool until you have to start like fucking the leader, you know?
Ain't that life? Ain't that life?
Yeah. Yeah. And they also put out literature and what circulated across the country. They got like a good amount of people.
Okay. Okay, UVs.
I know. And then when Victor died, his wife Florence took over. She kind of doubled down on the new coming of Jesus thing. And she set a date, April 22nd, 1959. It was supposed to be the start of the new messianic age.
That's Earth Day.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. And also my brother's birthday. So okay, there's energy.
There we go. And then, so in preparation for the coming of the Messiah, hundreds of people gathered in Waco starting around March 1959. But, spoiler, the end of the world did not happen.
Weirdly, no.
Shockingly.
Yeah.
So the group kind of splintered off. In 1962, Florence was basically like, I fucked up, you guys. And she disbanded her group. However, there was a persisting faction who were opposed to Florence, led by a man named Ben Rodin. And they took over Mount Carmel after she left, and he established the General Association of Davidian Seventh-day Adventists.
Adventists, yeah.
Adventists.
Well, that's how they would say it on Gilmore Girls.
So, let's go with that.
And also, I kind of get that because I feel like they probably were like, oh my God, we put so much fucking time into this. I'm not going to, like, Jason Mraz, I won't give up. But... Like,
sunk cost fallacy mixed with like they probably believed it.
Yeah, oh my God, of course.
Yes. So Ben wanted members to live a pure life and said when they reached moral maturity, Christ would come back. I mean, same, to be honest. Rodin died in 1978, and followers were kind of torn between going with his wife Lois or his son George. And it was during this period that our pal Vernon Howell joined the commune. He started an affair with Lois while he was in his late 20s and she was in her late 60s.
Okay.
So I want to say respect, but also a little yikes.
A little yikes, a little Scott Disick.
Ooh, yeah. But like reverse.
Reverse, yeah.
Reverse. So apparently Vernon wanted to father a child with her who he thought would be the chosen one. And Lois encouraged him to sing and play guitar, and his songs became a part of the daily Bible study sessions. He basically like believed he was King David and using his music to reach people, which is foreshadowing. But
I feel like that's every man with a guitar at a party.
Oh my God, right?
My music is affecting you positively.
Oh my God. Anyway, here's Wonderwall.
So maybe.
So then Lois died in 1986, and Vernon and George clashed about who was going to take control. And in 1987, there was a shootout, like literally a gunfight. Crazy. God,
that's a lot.
Craziness. And this is something that I had never, ever heard. George was shot in the head and the chest, and Vernon and seven other followers were put on trial for attempted murder.
Huh.
And everything about like the Waco siege, I feel like this is glossed over. The fact that he casually got away with attempted murder because his case ended in a mistrial and then everybody else was acquitted. So, yeah, he like, took control after this.
Yeah, I feel like that's a very intense footnote. Like it's treated as a footnote, but it's a very intense level of like how he rose to power. I'm like,
yeah,
he killed someone and then got off of it and then took
over. I think he almost killed him. I don't know if George survived because he was charged with attempted murder. But
oh, that's true.
In any case, like he was clearly not in a position to lead a religious movement.
No.
And then this is where things went south because this is the thing. It takes one bad boss to ruin a company. That's it. After Vernon took charge, he changed his name to David Koresh, essentially implying he was the spiritual heir of King David. And I got to say, as someone named Sarah, that is just not how that works. Which it was. And some background before we get super biblical, because we are about to. Koresh is the Hebrew version of Cyrus, who is the Persian king who conquered Babylon and allowed the Jews to return to Israel. Fun fact.
All right, there we go.
Koresh would later tell the FBI that God gave him his last name. Sure.
All right. Very like Carrie Underwood, and I don't even know my last name, but for God giving it to you.
Yes. And he basically claimed to be a messianic figure, but not the Messiah.
I know. I'd also, maybe that's just me being dumb. I didn't know there were able to be figures of a Messiah. You know what I mean? I did not know that that was a level. Maybe he just invented that, but you know what I mean?
I mean, I feel like he just invented that. I feel like that's kind of the point.
Yeah.
Rebag is a luxury resale marketplace. They have a curated collection of investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry. Each piece is carefully vetted and verified by experts. You can buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermes, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10.
So we digress into the biblical portion of this podcast. If you're happening to listen to this on a Sunday, I mean, double whammy. So it has to do with the Lamb, not the Mariah Carey fan groups, but you know what I mean. So the Brand Davidians believe the Bible is literally the word of God. So they are reading that word for word. So they look to it because of that for clues about Christ's second coming, because they assumed that they would leave all the clues in there. The book of Revelations talks about the seven seals, which basically are believed to herald the catastrophe mankind will go through in its final days. That sounds fun. The Lamb of God, according to Revelation, sparks the events that bring about the end of the world, such as pestilence and a war against Israel. Koresh taught the seven seals laid out his powers. He taught that those seven seals laid out his powers, and it gave him the power to take multiple wives.
I don't know. We'll get into shortly.
Oh, we're going to get into that. I also like love a fuckboy who's like, no, God said I should have multiple wives.
Hate that.
You guys didn't read it correctly. Koresh also said that God's plan was for him to populate the world with his children. And because they are reading the Bible and all this stuff, taking that at face value, he meant his children being biologically born through him.
Well, I think he just made this up.
Because they're all of this for them. Yeah. But yeah, you take
I was also there. Like, I was thinking, like, I know that it's funny because every time we talk about cults, like, we're always like, oh, how could you believe that, like, a lizard god is gonna, you know, bring along the end of days or whatever. But then if you go deep enough into Christianity, it's like the Lamb of God is going to open the seven seals and portend the end of mankind. Like, you know, Revelations is like wacky. Like, didn't we do a quiz where we had to guess something about the Bible passages?
We did. And we did not know it.
I feel like it's like I mean, it's not like Scientology, but it just reminds me of the levels of Scientology where you have to go up to get to the really out there stuff. Just like you have to go really far in the Bible to get. I mean, there's plenty of weird Bible stuff like early on, but
it kind of gets it's like when you launch, like the first two steps make sense. Like, okay, I understand the direction. I understand the directions. And you're like, I do what now? Like, it just gets a little bit crazy. Speaking of getting a little what now, he also claimed that him and the followers of him would become martyrs, but would also return to kill any non-believers. So a lot going on.
Excellent.
There. A lot going on there. You're going to
cool,
die.
Non-violent group.
Yeah. Love you'll that. Die. You'll very come back tolerant. To kill someone. Yeah. Very. Oh my God. So chill. So accepting. Heaven on earth. They thought that. Seventh-day Adventists, though, believe Christ already opened the seals in heaven after the ascension.
I will say I took down these notes. I am a Jew. I do not completely understand what this means. So if anything is wrong, just DM me.
I mean, from what I remember from CDC, I have no fucking clue.
Excellent. Where are the biblical scholars listening to this podcast? Yeah.
Oh gosh, please help us out. And sorry if anything that we're saying is so wrong for so wrong. But yeah, basically the seals are various periods throughout history, and they believe the seventh one hasn't been opened, hence their name. And they believe that this seventh seal will be opened with the coming of Christ himself.
Okay.
You know, kind of tracks a little bit.
I could see it. So that's that. That's sort of how he just sort of perverted that entire philosophy. Let's talk about life on this compound. Not shockingly, you're supposed to separate yourself from the world, according to a former member. I think that's kind of the general idea of going to live with a cult. And basically, you're supposed to be spiritual, and like not tied to sort of like the mortal world where there are sins, desires, flesh, all that bad stuff.
And all that jazz, like truly kind of is the opposite of what Chicago the Musical is about.
Literally. And so women had to wear long blouses that had to cover their butts, and they were not allowed makeup or jewelry. They all, like, nobody on the compound, they said this in the Truth and Lies Waco documentary. Koresh, like, had all these weird rules. Like, he would tell them where to sleep, and they had all these weird food rules. Like, they couldn't eat sugar, processed flour, or dairy products. And the dairy products was because he thought milk was for babies and not adults. He's not like wrong. I feel like scientifically, like so many adults are lactose intolerant, but I just feel like it's funny for him to be like, milk is for babies.
Yeah. He's like, I remember watching that in like on Looney Tunes. It's only for babies. Like now this is a factual thing on their premises.
Yeah. And then also in this documentary, they said there were a lot of like weird rules about combining foods. Like you couldn't do it. Like you could have, you could have apples and bananas together, but you couldn't have bananas and oranges, and you weren't allowed to eat fruit and vegetables together.
Well, I guess maybe the kids were loving that part. They're like, fuck my fruits, fuck my veggies. But I do want to say, apples and bananas go together with peanut butter, and oranges doesn't really go with peanut butter. So
yes, peanut butter could be the glue that holds us all together, because they, whatever meals they did get were sporadic and sometimes were actually just peanuts.
Hey, you know what?
There I'm sure go. They would have loved some PB.
Who doesn't?
Yeah. And also there was no heat or electricity. So this place just sounded miz.
This is camping. This is camping when you don't know how to camp. This would be us if we're camping. I'd be like, literally, I have peanuts and we don't know where we're sleeping. We
get a hot dog, try to roast it on a stick, and we're like, oh, I thought you knew how to make a fire.
We're just using a Bic lighter, hoping for the best.
Oh my God, seriously. So also even worse, which we would hate even more, the followers had to run like military exercises starting at 5 a.m. every single day.
Oh my God.
Followed by Bible study, which was 3 times a day.
No.
This is terrible. Honestly, like if this is what it takes for eternal salvation, like I'll see you in hell.
I would be going down the stripper pole with Lil Nas X.
Right? Like just stripper pole down to hell. Like it's a fire pole. Seriously. And then Koresh would also separate families from each other. Everyone, even married couples at one point, were supposed to embrace celibacy, except for David, because he was like super vulgar and talked about sex a lot. And then he got to a point where he claimed all the marriages would be dissolved and all the women would be his wives.
Okay.
Yeah. He started with 5 wives, all of whom were underage, and said God told him who to take and not to take as a wife. So, you know, he's not a pedophile. Just God told him.
God's plan.
Gross. One woman who was in her 20s at the time refused to have sex with Koresh. So she was locked in a small shed for 3.5 months.
Oh, God.
Fucking awful. And eventually he had 20 wives. 20. And he basically called himself a sinful messiah, because that was his justification for like how he could tell them to be celibate and do all this, not do all this stuff. While meanwhile, he could drink, smoke, have sex, and commit adultery. Right.
Messiahs are just like us. Yeah.
I know. Right. We love a relatable messiah. And then also there were some allegations of child abuse as well. One former member who left the compound when she was 6 remembers being hit often and punished basically 24/7. And this gives me some, was it 12 tribes vibes? Because the children were beat with a wooden paddle, which they called the helper.
Oh, God.
And they would get disciplined for minor things like literally spilling milk.
Like being a child. And also they were the ones that were fucking forced to drink milk. So,
yeah. Oh, my God. Right. And then this is actually fucking crazy, because they also had to fight each other to train for the final battle. And if they didn't fight hard enough, they would get paddled. Like, you have a kid fight club. What the hell is going on?
That is hell. It's like truly just it's torture.
This is crazy. And They were also instructed to call their parents dogs and could only call Koresh father.
Okay.
Gross. And just as a trigger warning in advance, what I'm about to list is going to discuss sexual abuse. So just use a little like 30-second skip button. So also girls as young as 11 were given this plastic Star of David, which meant they had the light and were ready to have sex with the cult leader. And also several of his wives were not even teenagers. Like, this is so gross. I remember in the documentary, like, some former members being like, yeah, I wish we had realized like he was just a pedophile. Like, I think it just literally didn't click for these people.
Well, also because when you're in it and like that's your fucking world and you're just eating peanuts, you can't really form.
Yeah, you're eating peanuts. You're not sleeping. You're being run ragged, literally.
Right. It's like how Nexium, everyone was like too fucking starved to even
seriously have thought
processes of like what they what is right and what is wrong and what they could do, what they should do, anything.
Yeah.
Obviously, this is not just this thing going completely unnoticed in Waco, Texas. There are people looking into it, being very like, what the fuck is going on here? This is weird. This is wrong. So we get to the raid and the seas and shit gets very crazy here. So it was called originally Operation Trojan Horse, and we're going to go into all of it. It gets very, a lot of crazy missteps and things just get taken to very much extremes and everything like this as far as stings go. First and foremost, the FBI either did not totally care, but more so they didn't have enough evidence to go in and investigate on cases of molestation on David, just because it was one of those things that was being commonly talked about and stuff like that. But in terms of like being able to secure a warrant, there was no concrete proof or evidence.
I feel like it's hard when you just have these people in this like insular commune who probably don't want to talk to the cops.
Exactly. Cause if they get out, and also if anyone gets out, they just want to get the fuck out. They're not going to try to like, you know what I mean? That. Yeah. So their main interest, so according to these later documents, was the alleged possessions of potentially illegal firearms and weapons on the site. And they had proof/suspicion of this because the investigation started almost a year ago in June 1992. When the ATF, the Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms Bureau, which is kind of a party group, allegedly right? I'm like,
okay. It's like, you couldn't even get the FBI.
Yeah, right. I might need on them. The ATF allegedly became concerned because they were receiving reports of automatic gunfire coming from their compound. So now they were able to kind of be like, okay, well, we hear fucking fire and everything. So it's, we hear like firearms and stuff like that. That has to be something. The same year in July, two of the ATF agents visited their gun dealer, Koresh's gun dealer. His name was Henry McMahon, who tried to get them to talk to Koresh on the phone. And Koresh allegedly offered to show them like weapons paperwork and stuff like that. But the ATF was like, no, thank you. Don't know. I know. I was
that about.
It was kind of interesting because I was kind of like, I wonder if they were doing it to be like, nope, we still want a raid, or just if they were like,
literally, you know what I mean? Feel like exactly that, like covering your ears, being like, I can't hear you.
Right. Like, oopsies.
No, totally.
So they ultimately did receive a search warrant on the suspicion that the Davidians were modifying guns. So taking guns that maybe they did own legally or just taking guns and adding illegal automatic fire capability to them, which is terrifying.
Yikes.
And would track. This also was known as the Aguilera affidavit, not Christina Aguilera, but
thank you for that.
One of the ATF employees who went to look at the gun dealer and refused to have to crash.
Interesting.
And so they got this warrant, and the search warrant was only allowed to, or it was only valid, on or before February 28th, 1993. And it had to be during daytime hours. But daytime hours for this was 6 a.m. to 10 p.m. I feel like that kind of
encroaches. Like, damn, I'm moving to Texas. No, I'm not. But
no, I'm not. I need my daylight hours. I know. I'm like, what is that? And I don't know if it just kind of like is 11 p.m. like full pitch blackness. Who knows? So their plan was to do this raid on March 1st, 1993 and call it Showtime, which I love as a name. But it was moved up to February 28th due to this article that came out, The Sinful Messiah, that was in the Tribune.
And also, wait, what's that about?
Okay, yeah. So, well, also my favorite thing is like, why was it going to be March 1st? The affidavit stopped on the 20th. I mean, the warrant.
Exactly. Was, it's like, you didn't have the clearance. I don't understand.
that threw me off a lot. So this Sinful Messiah article was in the local Tribune. I'm forgetting on what the full name of it was, because the article was going to like cause, the ATF knew it was going to cause mass panic, hysteria.
Oh, wait, cancer. The Waco Tribune. I read that article.
Oh, the Waco Tribune. Yes, yes.
Oh, yeah. That's where I got all the stuff about the Lamb of God. So if I got it wrong, blame this article.
Yes.
Yeah, it was called The Sinful Messiah, Seven Seals Key to Vernon Howell's Power. It was published February 27th of 1993.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it was like all about how he sort of like perverted these views and how they aren't actually in line with like what Seventh-day Adventists believe and all this other stuff.
Yes, exactly. So they were like,
turn up, go us.
Okay. You know? And yeah, right. So the ATF knew that this article was coming and they were working with the Tribune to be like, can you push it until after our raid? Like, because they were talking in the beginning of February because the article was ready for February 1st. And they were like, oh, can you push it? We just want to get all the ducks in a row to do this. Tribune was like, yeah. After a lot of back and forth, they were getting not a lot of answers from the ATF. They were like, you know, we're just going to fucking release it because, honey, headlines
send
are.
It.
Headlines are currency, baby. We with this.
No, we got to sell papers.
And also, it was the thing too. I'm like, y'all were sitting on your thumbs with this warrant. They didn't do anything until the story
until
came
like
out.
That's like when I don't actually do an assignment until after the due date, and then I'm like, oh my god, sorry, my Wi-Fi was out. Like, what are you doing?
Right? It's like you had a month, but instead you're just having a rushed panic of a day.
Yeah.
And this first raid was sort of a panic. So on February 28th, 1993, the Bureau ATF attempted to raid the Branch Davidian site in order to execute this search warrant. The raid turned very dark and very messy very quickly. Ugh. It's still kind of TBD how it exactly started in terms of who turned it more violent, but the ending result was a shootout that killed 5 agents, 5 Branch Davidians, and injured at least additional 16 agents. So
that's not good.
Obviously, you have this article in the Tribune that came out. Everyone's like, what the fuck is happening here? Then you have this shootout with the government happening here. Everything's like, what the fuck do we do? So then, of course, you call in the FBI. The FBI took it over from the Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, Explosive Group. And what the FBI ultimately ended up doing, this led to what you all probably know, the 51-day standoff between the Branch Davidians and the FBI. And the standoff was a little crazy. They used a lot of different tactics on them to breach the compound. And it's kind of interesting. Like, so they would do things like playing loud music 24/7 to make people get tired, feel crazy, just like either to do that, to get people to talk, to get them feeling weak, or to get them looking crazy enough to be on.
To leave.
And also to film people being crazy so they can use it as like, look at these like crazy mud effers going around.
Part of me is like, this sounds like a fraternity hazing. And part of me is also like, this is pretty gross to do to like your own citizens.
Yeah. Well, it gets into a very interesting conversation with that. And that's where people still feel a little bit like, what is going on here? They even had a 6-hour conversation with Koresh, did not go anywhere, obviously. And the FBI even felt a little divided on how this was going down. Some of the agents were kind of like, we should try to have like a more conversational, a little less extreme tactic with them. The other side wanted to blast music and get giant cars and kind of ram them into the fence, which they ultimately did do.
There really are two types of people, am I right?
The ones that entertain and the ones that observe.
Oh, man.
So in the first few days, the FBI honestly did believe that they made a breakthrough when they negotiated with Koresh an agreement that the BDs would leave the compound in return for a message recorded by Koresh being broadcasted on national radio. This kind of reminded me of the Unabomber, because didn't they make him demanded the newspaper thing and then he never came forward or like never stopped?
I know he had some like manifesto.
Yeah, they published the manifesto thinking that they would go and read it. Oh, there was a really good documentary or like mini series.
Yeah, Netflix.
Yes.
So, I liked that one.
So the broadcast made, but then Koresh told the investigators that God had told him to remain in the building and wait. Noi doi. After this, some children were released, though, and they were interviewed. Then, on March 9th, this is circling back to the idea of making these people look very, like, sleep-depriving them. They sent a video cam into the compound, and Koresh recorded himself and his wives and children. They also, this showed, though, oh, he recorded them just, like, walking around, like, a tour, like, kind of like stuff like that.
Seeming fine.
Seeing fine. So they said, so in this was, he used this footage to try and tell them that no one seemed to be a hostage. Negotiators did nothing with this footage because it said it would just make Koresh and his crew gain sympathy and feeling like, oh, well, they really do seem just like fine in there. You know what I mean?
That's suspect.
So finally, on April 19th, kind of interesting, the same week that their whole second coming was going to be going down back in the day.
You're right.
The FBI raided the compound after fear of more child abuse and mass suicide. They did this by using intense...
But I feel like there wasn't really evidence that that mass suicide was ever like their goal. I feel like this was just... when I think Jonestown was like right before this.
Mm-hmm. So I'm sure they were
like,
using
I feel
that.
Like this was just sort of cult paranoia. And also just they didn't like them to begin with.
Definitely cult paranoia, and definitely I feel the ammo angle wasn't working them or doing anything with that. So then they were like, they could use force to be like, children are in danger. Everyone's going to...
Okay,
you know,
so Jonestown was 1978. So that was like before this.
Yeah.
Not super recent, but...
But also it's a known enough thing where people could easily link this to Jonestown.
And then, no, what wasn't Heaven's Gate? Sorry, now I'm Googling.
Oh, Heaven's Gate.
I'm like, I feel like there was some mass suicide right before this. Yeah, 1990. Oh, this was after this. 1997 was Heaven's Gate. Whatever. All I'm saying is, like, they never talked about mass suicide or, like, ascension or blah, 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 like, any of that stuff.
Yeah. So none of that was mentioned for the Branch Davidians, but they said there was fear for that. So they raided, and they did this by using intense tanks and tear gas, which started a fire. Well,
maybe.
It's still unknown who everyone is that song, "We Didn't Start the Fire." And killed almost...
That stuck in my head since we started researching this.
Oh my God. Oh, without a doubt. Yeah. but this ultimately ended up killing almost all of the Branch Davidians. 76 of the 85 people, including Koresh himself. So just 9 people were able to escape. Obviously, a lot of people looked at this like, woo, go watch, the crazy cult is gone. Even Bill Clinton said the FBI had no responsibility for the deaths of these people. But some people kind of felt like... this was sort of taken to the extreme. A lot of, I mean, from people from like far left, people saying like they had a right to do what they wanted to do or something like that, to far right people using it as a rallying cry, a federal threat.
So it's interesting. And I will say that, like, on the one hand, the FBI's handling of the siege has been heavily criticized. Mm-hmm. And the attorney general at the time, Janet Reno, she eventually admitted that there was like no evidence of ongoing child abuse at the compound, which was one of the justifications for the gas attack. But that confused me because, like, people who had left the group said that there was child abuse. But maybe they just didn't have strong evidence.
I think that's the thing. I think they were, in terms of like to qualify a raid or an attack that is signed off by the government, I think they need to have like a victim or someone coming forward saying like, this is happening right now. They are going to that person. Like,
I guess that makes sense.
Yeah.
I don't know. She did take responsibility for the botched raid. And although the government has like maintained that they weren't responsible for the fires in 1999, it came out that some of the gas the FBI used was flammable under certain conditions, whatever that means. Mm-hmm. And so then eventually Reno appointed John Danforth to conduct an investigation. And I mean, predictably, in 2000, he concluded that government agents did not start the fire or shoot at the compound. And they still maintained that none of the agents like shot at people at the compound. But then when people... like when they went into the compound after the whole standoff, like there were kids with bullet wounds, like one child had been stabbed.
I know a lot of children were like, I don't know if they fell, but a lot of them were like on roofs and falling off the roofs too. And I don't like, of course no one knows how that happened, but just also.
Yeah. Super suspect. I don't know. I mean, I feel like I mean, I don't feel like, I think the FBI definitely botched this.
Oh yeah. But it's also, it's a thing too, where it's kind of like they botched it, but what, like you wonder what would, I don't think anything like a mass suicide would ever happen, but I guess it's sort of like, I couldn't imagine the FBI leaving them just there because of how angry they were and how much conversation was going on about them, especially after the article that came out.
Yeah, I guess my thing is like, yeah, they just, it just went so poorly.
It's also a hard thing too, where it's like, you realize it's like a lot that what happens in a cult is when it gets illegal, but you need the proof for that, unfortunately, for a government. And like, it is not illegal if you pay the more, or if you pay the land or whatever, like you can compound where you fucking compound.
Yeah, I know. And it's like people were getting hurt, but they didn't deserve to die.
Well, that's the hard thing too. They went in to try to, I mean, that's what makes me so bad and sad. I'm like, they went in to try to save these people, but they killed the majority of them.
Yeah. Yeah. It's totally terrible.
Oh God. I mean,
totally terrible. But after this, I never want to speak about this again.
Never, 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 never. I never want to. I was going to say, I never want to go to Texas, but I do love Austin. And I did have fun in Houston. And those are the
only. I will say, like, it's weird to watch Fixer Upper because they are primarily in Waco and they never address it.
Yeah, no, of course.
No, of course. But it's like weird because it's, I feel like it's got to be the elephant in the room. At least it is for me as like a true crime fan, being like, this is the defining event of this city or town, whatever it is.
That's true.
And then they're like, now we're just going to slap some shiplap on it and pretend this never happened.
And honey, that is symbolic and metaphorical for so many people. Just slap some shiplap on it and pretend it never happened.
Yes, let's do that. And here to help us slap some shiplap on this episode is Jorge with some games.
I fully agree, Sarah. Let's never talk about this one again. It's so dark. Looking at all this stuff, it's kind of like, wow. I can't believe. And so sad, yeah, for all these people that were just kind of drawn in by this weird guy.
Yeah.
And it's sad because I feel like this group was operating, I mean, in ways that I don't agree with and would never want to live my life, but they didn't seem to be harming anyone until, like, he got in the picture.
That's all. Yeah.
Yeah. I guess they were just caught in the vortexes.
And that's the game.
That is the name of today's game.
Oh, well, is it?
Guess Danny.
Ooh. Oh.
So I didn't know this, but Texas as a state and as a place has actually belonged to 6 different countries throughout its history. It's had 6 flags flown above it, which is coincidentally why Six Flags, the amusement park, is called Six Flags.
Wait, are you serious?
Was it started in Texas?
Yep.
Who knew?
Whoa.
Who knew? Also, Dr. Pepper was started in Texas, which I did not know. I found a lot of fun facts about Texas.
This is good. It's
very interesting.
This Lone Star State.
But today, what we're going to do is take a little trivia trip through all the different countries that have controlled Texas at some point of their history and answer one question about each of them as we go along.
Huh. All right. Oh, God. Okay.
Let's go.
All right. So the first country that had control over Texas was, any guesses?
England? No.
I think Spain.
That is correct, Sarah. It was Spain. Well done. So, which of these 2 Catholic monarchs united Spain for the first time through their marriage?
Is it multiple choice?
It is multiple choice.
Oh, phew. Okay.
Was it Isabel y Fernando?
Mm.
Caterina y José?
Mm.
María y David? Or Ana y Pedro?
Ooh.
I think it's Isabel and Fernando.
I was going to do Isabel too.
That is correct. You are both correct and on the board.
Woo!
Chalk one up to the American education system.
Yeah.
I was wondering if you guys learned that too, because I learned that in Puerto Rico, but it was mostly because Spain like actually kind of controlled us for a very long time.
Oh. But
Well done, U.S. school system.
Oh, I learned that. I took European history, and I think that's where
I learned that.
Yeah,
there
U.S. history, I did not learn any of that. So don't give too much credit to the public school system.
These two, they were called Isabel la Católica, Isabella the Catholic, and Fernando de Aragón, which is Ferdinand from Aragon, I guess. And they controlled sort of different parts of Spain. And when they got married, then Spain was born. Spain was their love child, if you will.
Love child.
Love it.
All right. Next up, we have France that controlled Texas for a while.
Mm.
And Sarah, you spent some time in France, right?
Oui.
She has a Paris poster, so there we go.
Yes. Italy flag like fell down as we started talking about this.
Oh my god!
Oh, they're mad.
So, which of these phrases is the French motto? All right.
This one.
Is it God, Fatherland, and Liberty? Is it plus ultra, which is Latin for further beyond? Is it liberté, égalité, fraternité, which means liberty, equality, and fraternity? Or is it travail, justice, solidarité? I'm sorry for all our French speakers for butchering those. But that last one means work, justice, and solidarity.
I was going to say voulez-vous coucher avec quoi ce soir?
I mean, that's the official motto.
Wait, I'm going to do C.
Yeah, it's the liberté, égalité, fraternité.
Beautifully said. Oh my God. Wow.
You got the Spanish, I mean.
You guys are both acing this quiz.
Love it.
I am
for the first time in not another true crime history.
Well, the reason I knew they wouldn't do a Latin one, and I know they got a month off, so I assumed it wouldn't be about work because they have amazing work-life balance.
I feel like they get a month off every month. Like, they just do not work.
All right, next up, Texas was annexed by Mexico. So the question is, which of these foods were not eaten by the Mayans, which are the natives that ruled Mexico before Europeans came and wiped everyone out? Was it corn, avocados, tomatoes, or rice?
Which was not eaten?
Yeah, which one was not eaten by them?
I want to say rice wasn't.
I know. I'm thinking it's tomatoes or rice. Where do tomatoes grow? I have no fucking idea. I want to also go with rice.
We've been joining it together on all these. So.
All right, let's go with rice.
You're both correct.
Ooh.
Well done. Rice is actually an Asian sort of invention, and that was brought over. But tomatoes, which is something I did not know, are actually endemic to the American continent.
Ah.
Which is pretty crazy to think about, because I tend to think of tomatoes as so, like, quintessentially Italian for some reason.
Yeah, that's so true.
I really do,
They're American.
That's so true.
I do have to say, too, if you ever watch a video of, like, rice farming, it is so fascinating how it is done.
How do they do it?
It's, like, it involves just, like, because I think it's, like, maybe this was just in one area, but, like, the area was, like, flooded with water, and then they just have to, like, collect it from
with,
that.
With, like, the rice paddies.
With the rice paddies, cool. It's really cool.
Another fun fact about Mexico, while we're here, is that the meteorite that wiped all the dinosaurs landed in Mexico.
Oh, wow. Nice!
is there like a crater thing that you can see?
That'd be so dope.
Yeah, there is a crater.
And really?
It was discovered by an oil company called Petronas.
Pretty interesting, awesome.
Actually. They just kind of like stumbled upon this crater when they were digging for oil. They're like, oh, this is pretty crazy. And then they figured out that it was the meteorite that killed all the dinosaurs.
The race from oil taught us something cool.
All right. Next up on our trip through the vortexes is that Texas declared independence at one point, and it was just the Republic of Texas.
Okay.
Their own flag flown above their land. At that point, How many countries was Texas bigger than?
Ooh.
There's no multiple choice here. It's just a guess.
So geographically? We'll
finally, yeah, this is by just land area.
Like out of all the countries in the world?
All the countries in the world.
Jesus.
Wait, all the countries in the world at the time of there or present day?
Today, basically.
Oh, like, okay. I know yeah. that. Okay.
Why do I want... Oh.
I have no fucking
small,
idea.
We got some small states. Fuck.
I'm going to go with 12.
I was going to say 15.
So Texas today would be the 40th largest on Earth.
There we go.
Which is a bad thing, but it's also a state of the
US.
It's
pretty big.
So it's pretty crazy. And it's actually bigger than every single nation in Europe, which is crazy to think about. It's twice the size of Germany.
Oh, really? I did not think that.
I need to look at a map. What?
Yeah, like legit. I was like, well, I know it's bigger than Israel because Israel is like the size of New Jersey, but that was like all I was working with.
Right.
I was like, probably Italy as well. And that was it.
So I think Danny was actually closer there.
Yes,
so
you
Danny,
were.
You move into the lead.
Here we go.
All right, we have another numbers one.
Oh, fuck. Okay.
So after Texas was its own republic, it actually ended up joining the Confederacy when it seceded from the United States, famously, in the Civil War.
Ever heard of it?
No.
We'll do an episode on the crime that was the Confederacy.
God. Yeah.
So how many states were in the Confederacy? For context, there was 31 total states at the time.
Oh, fuck. Okay.
So how many states seceded from the 31 in the Union?
Okay.
17?
I was going to go with a lucky 13.
The correct answer was 11.
Ooh.
Oh!
Yeah. So Sarah,
I was trying to count the individual states, and then I was like, forget it.
And then I was trying to think, where were more states?
I was like,
made?
Was Kansas a thing then? I don't remember.
Yeah, so there was 20 states in the Union and 11 that formed part of the Confederacy, okay. Which is interesting to think about, but in terms of land mass, it actually was pretty equal. There's just so many smaller states up in the north and the northeast that it kind of equaled out. But yeah, Texas was definitely the biggest state in the Confederacy at the time and supported it with the biggest number of soldiers. But in spite of that, they were not very successful in their Confederacy, and they're back on the Union, boys.
Yeah. And if you don't like it, I don't know what to tell you.
Oh, my God.
And last up in our vortexes, Texas formed part of the United States after the Civil War. And what was the last state to join the Union of the United States? Was it?
Oh, good. Thank God.
Okay. Same mindset.
Arizona, Wyoming, Alaska, or Hawaii?
Oh, you mean like not Civil War, just like of all time?
Yeah, of all time.
Gotcha.
I think Arizona.
It's either Alaska or Hawaii, and I'm going to go with Hawaii. Well,
fuck me.
Sarah is correct. Well done. Alaska and Hawaii were the last two to join, and Arizona was the last and the last three. So they were all pretty close.
Because I remember they had like some weird thing where they were trying to be their own thing or something like that, right? I don't know.
Yeah, I think a lot of these sort of southern states have that sort of like states' rights.
They got some energy going on.
But Alaska and Hawaii actually joined in the same year, which was 1959. Alaska joined in January 3rd, and then Hawaii joined in August 21st. So pretty close, but Hawaii was the last one to this day. But maybe soon
they'll
be 51st, D.C.
Yeah.
Ooh.
They'll redo the flag.
That'd be exciting.
Yeah.
I don't know where that would happen. Yeah.
It'd be funny because I feel like it's all the neat rows and then you just have one on the end.
That would sum us up a lot better than a bunch of neat rows.
That's right, cool. Right. I have seen designs with like staggered lines that actually look pretty nice. Like you wouldn't be able to tell it's 51 if you weren't.
Oh,
like,
that would be good.
Oh, okay,
so shoot. Yeah, there's ways around it. But right. Sarah, you have won today's game.
Woo!
You were not caught in the vortexes. Danny, unfortunately, perished.
I'll have a shiner. It'll be fine. That's a Texas beer for anyone who doesn't know.
Oh, I thought you meant you were going to have like a black eye.
I realized after I said that, I was like, I should clarify that I meant the beer from Texas.
Love it. But, oh, man. Well, that was so fun. Thank you, Jorge, for that educational game.
No problem.
I feel like I learned something.
I feel like I learned a lot too. And with that, we thank you all for listening. Please rate, review, and subscribe wherever you're listening to us. Follow us on Instagram at Not Another True Crime. Join the Facebook group. Guys, I'm telling you, I don't want to have to say it again. I'm just kidding. I'll say it again. But just please answer like at least one of the questions, because I have so many pending requests of just like people who didn't answer any of the questions. And I feel like it's spam and I'm just scared to approve you. So therefore, just tell us you listen to the podcast. We'll let you write in. It's really fun. We just talk about like cases, true crime updates. People are coming in with like true crime cases that hit home to them. Like people they knew.
Really, and like they provide a lot of additional like local context too, which is very fascinating. It's very interesting.
Yeah, super interesting. And other than that, you can follow me on Instagram, Sarah Lameem.
You can follow me at Cashmere Danny, Cashmere with a K.
And we will be back in your ear next week.
Not Another True Crime Podcast is produced by Jorge Morales Pico and Sean Kilby. Our hosts are Sarah Lameem and Danny Murphy. Editing by Jorge Morales Pico. Social media by Sarah Lameem. Be sure to follow at NATC Pod on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. And send us your emails to natc@betches.com. Betches.